morning.
Good morning.
I came in pretty calm this morning and my nerves are building, so I hope my voice is steady. So happy Earth Day. I'm so glad you said that. On Earth Day, for the first time in a number of years, we're here together. And as Dick said, I'm here representing our Green Sanctuary Committee. And we're a small group, but we are very dedicated to helping our church and our community remain loyal to our seventh principle, which is the respect for interdependent web of all existence, of which we all are a part. And so this morning I bring some thoughts on how we stay spiritually connected to our home, Earth. As I was preparing for this talk, I had three veins of thought going on in my mind. My own experience with place, my parents' experience with place, and my perception of people's experience with loss of place. And so I'm going to start there with the loss of place and in kind of a broad way. A number of years ago, when I was just developing my connection with the shore as my home, a minister came to speak at my church, and it was a different church than this, about the Palestinians in their conflict with Israel. And he had spent a lot of time in Palestine, with the Palestinians. I don't know a lot about the intricacies of that conflict, but I remember one particular thing from his talk about his experience with the people there. He shared that part of the conflict for them was the profound sense of loss that they felt for the land that they had been connected to and now were denied access. This was not a loss of property that he was talking about and that they felt, but it was a loss of connection to a place that they loved. And this struck me as something very universal and makes me think, thus my candle this morning, of all the refugees in our world. We hear so much about refugees in the news, and mostly the news is talking about human refugees, but there are many, many creatures who are displaced from their home due to habitat loss or fire, you know, as last year, the fires in California, or just the simple act of building a dam disconnects organisms to something crucial or important to them. So I've had that on my mind. So a sense of place, a connection to land, I think is important to many. And when I think about, the second part of this is when I think about my own parents' upbringing, I think about their sense of place, and I think for them it may have been disrupted a little bit in their growing up. My mom in particular, because her military family moved all the time, almost every year she moved. And then my dad, because he had a fairly tumultuous childhood, and I think he was always seeking a sense of place that would make him feel secure. Growing up for me, though, we did have a special place. I moved around a little bit, too, but my family spent every summer vacation of my childhood on an island off the coast of Maine called Monhegan Island, tiny little place. It's mile by 2 miles. No cars there, a few trucks for the fishermen. And it was our place first because my father was in love with this place. And then because we loved it too. And since the time that I was small, and this will choke me up a little bit, I can remember my father saying to me, "When I die, my soul will immediately leave my body and fly directly," he always used the word directly, "to Monhegan, and that is where I will stay, and you will find me." My father actually lives there now, which is such a grace. And Willie and I have taken our own children there every year for vacation. It's a beloved place for all of us. My father in particular has true affection And he is akin to Monhegan. He really, truly is akin. He has made that so first by his deep affection and then by his intentional learning of that place. He knows every trail. He knows every rock and tree. He knows every house and who lives in it and who did live in it and who they sold it to. He knows who comes to visit in the summer. He knows what will happen when a storm comes from a particular direction. And some of the very large rocks, really large rocks, that he piled up in Lobster Cove, he shifted them around and piled them up to make a swimming hole for us, are still in those piles for some other child to have a little swimming hole in Lobster Cove, where the tide comes in and out. He knows this place, and he has made common cause with it. When he retired there over 20 years ago, his job then became to travel the roads and trails on foot, there aren't any cars, and spend time with the place that he loves so dearly. And he advocates for this place to whoever will listen. And a lot of people do. No, just random people on the road. Now, my mom lives in Columbia, and she has made that her place. She and my stepfather have a sweet little townhome that looks out on the Patapsco River behind them. It's really pretty. And my mom is a watcher, and she sits on her balcony, or she walks her dog around the lake near her house, and she notices everything, every plant and every creature, and that's about, she'll notice them, and she will point them out to you and to whoever's listening. And she likes to bring nature back into her house, which my husband would laugh at me talking about that, because apparently we have rules in my house now because I bring things in too often. But so she likes to bring things back in the house. She'll bring seed pods or flowers or sticks. And she has in her house, she has this lunar moth that she found on her porch one time. It had died already. Beautiful green lunar moth. And so she framed it. And it's hanging in her house. It's just lovely. So these are the parents I come from. Now, when I was in college, I had an opportunity, shifting my story a little bit, to apply for a full ride to college. They would pay for my whole education from the state, and it was specifically for teachers. If you would agree to teach in Maryland for 3 years, they would pay for your tuition. I did not apply for this scholarship because for sure I was out of here. I did not have a strong connection to Maryland in my heart. I was either going to Maine, or I was going to Alaska to find the place that I loved. I left college with a significant amount of debt, and interestingly enough, I have taught in Maryland schools for 20 years. So, I couldn't leave back then, and I couldn't figure out why, and I actually gave myself a pretty hard time about it. I was like, you are weak. You're weak. But now I really know why I couldn't leave, and I'm so glad I didn't. First, Willie was waiting for me here. But that's a different story. And second, the Eastern Shore was waiting for me here. And after Willie found me, we moved here. Excuse me. And I found my connection, and I found my home, and I love it here. So the rest of my sermon today is a collection of short stories. Stories about knowing your home and making common cause with it. Wendell Berry keeps coming up today, and Dick talked a little bit about who he is. He's one of my favorites. But he would say, learn the place you live and make common cause with it. I share these stories to illustrate this process a little bit of finding home and making common cause. And so here are my stories. So, Willie and I began looking for a house over here, and we looked at several. Some were obviously not for us, and a couple were nice homes for a young couple with no money. When we came to look at what is now our home, we knew pretty quickly that we belonged there. We would have loved to buy our own little farm, but as I said, we had very little money, so we weren't buying our farm. But this house was surrounded by farms. And although they do not belong to us, I can honestly say that we belong to them now. So when we first moved here, I was still teaching in Howard County. So Annie, who was two, and I would drive to my mom's on Sunday night, and we would stay with her during the week, and then we would come home for the weekends. On our drive home in the evening on that last day of school, we would chat, and it was spring, so every week that we came home, it would be a little bit lighter. You know, we'd get here and, you know, just be a little bit lighter each time. When we would get to the bridge, our hearts would be so full, and we would take a deep breath, and we'd roll down the windows and breathe the shore air as we crossed that divide. Crossing the bridge was really beautiful. It was beautiful. Sometimes we would be there right at sunset, and the light on the water was just amazing. For my birthday that spring, Willie bought me a kayak, and we would take it to the end of our road and put it into Reed's Creek. And paddle around in the evening. It was a two-seater, so we were all together. Annie would sit in my lap, and we saw herons and ducks and geese and fish jumping. And it would be quiet and peaceful and calm. Annie would fall asleep, just this little tow-headed kid. And I can remember thinking, wow, how did I get so lucky to live in Camelot? I've moved to Camelot. I was just infatuated with this place. In our little house, our bedroom had a set of windows that looked out onto the side yard where there was a beginning of woods. And at night, when we would go to sleep, we'd have the windows open and you could hear the owls calling back and forth to each other. We have watched those owls raise their young in a hollow tree near the lane on a number of years. And Annie has even taken some really fabulous photographs of the little owlets sitting on the edge of that rotting tree. One night, I was coming home late from work. I was working in a restaurant. And I was almost home. And there was a bag in the middle of the road as I was approaching this stop sign. So I went around it because it really freaks me out to wonder what's in a bag in the middle of the road. And as I passed it, I realized it wasn't a bag at all. Thank goodness I went around it. It was an owl sitting in the middle of the road. And so I pulled over and walked over to see him. And he must have been stunned, like he must have hit something or hit a car, because he didn't move when I came close to him. So I went back to my car and I got a beach towel and I wrapped him in this beach towel and took him back to my car. And I climbed back in and drove the last, like, 0.2 mile to my house with an owl wrapped in a beach towel sitting in my lap. My husband faints when he hears that story. I was almost to my driveway when he started to stir and wiggle in the beach towel, and I was, you know, a little nervous about his impression of what was going on. And so I stopped the car and let him wiggle his way out of the beach towel, and he sort of popped up onto the window door, which was open, and stood there, and I was a little bit nervous, so I took the beach towel and I held it up like this between us, and I thought, you know, he'll fly away. It'll be great. He's fine. He can move. So I did that, and he didn't fly away. And so I would do this. I had my towel, and I would go to see what he was doing. And every time I did this, and I did it like 4 or 5 times, he would do the same thing back. So he's on this side, and I would pull the towel down, and he would go. And we just looked at each other for a while. It was amazing. And finally, he did fly away, and I was glad. He seemed to be fine. He flew off, and I was elated, actually, to have had this owl in my car. I felt like I had made a friend in that moment, you know, or at least a connection with this creature that I've been listening to for a couple years. It was awesome. Favorite story. So, a little further down the line, the day we brought Alice home from the birthing center, there were a pair of eagles that are resident on her neck. That's what we call our road, the neck. And they circled our house when we got home. They circled our house all afternoon. And interestingly enough, they visit our house and circle our house every time Alice has a significant event. We had a blessing for her. They hung out all day. She graduates from high school. They hung out all day. I really believe that they have a connection to her and they look out for her. She says they're her totem. And then onward. As the girls got a bit older, a friend of ours invited us to raise bees at our house, and he would help us because he knew bees. He gave us a hive, and we put a pheromone in it that spring, and the pheromone attracted a wild swarm of bees, and they came and lived in the hive, and they stayed with us for several years after that. Harvesting honey is outrageous fun. It is so sticky and adrenaline-producing because you're constantly afraid that you're going to be stung. And sometimes you do get stung, but most of the time you don't get stung. So one time, this hive of bees, it had gotten really populated. It was too populated. So what hives do when they get overpopulated is they hatch a new queen, and that queen leaves, and she takes half the population with her. And so she'll go out, and she'll land somewhere like your chimney or a branch in your yard. This has happened a couple times. And then all the bees that she's going to take with her will surround her and form this really dripping mass of bees. And they look like a fluid. Like if you stand back from it, it looks like something fluid coming off your tree. And then a handful of the bees will go off to try and find a better home for them. And so they hang out there for a few days. And so I let my friend Christopher know that this had happened. He's like, oh, we need to catch that hive. So he came to our house and we hatched a plan of how we were going to do it. He brought a new hive body, which is essentially a box. And we, got some gloves and we tucked our sleeves into our gloves. They were like little cotton dollar store gloves. And we tucked our jeans into our socks. And that was it. That was all the gear we had. And our plan was he was going to take the hive body and hold it underneath the swarm. And I was going to take a big stick and hit the branch right above the swarm, which would cause the queen to let go. And she would drop down into the hive box. And her population, would drop down with her into the box. And so Christopher warned me. He's like, just be prepared. It's a good chance we're going to get stung. Just brace yourself. He held the box. I hit the stick. The bees dropped down into the box. We set the box down, put the lid on. We did not get stung one time. And those bees stayed with us for a while. And they shared their honey with us. And it was awesome. It was so lovely to have jars of honey that came from our yard. And now on. A few years back, our dearest friends, about 15 years ago, got married in June, one June day, on their family farm, which is down the street from us, which is how we know them. They rented a tent and set it up on the lawn. They had tables and a dance floor and flowers. It was beautiful, fabulous. The morning of the wedding, it was raining. And it was not just raining. It was unbelievable raining. It was that year, and some of you will remember this, it was about 15 years ago. The rain started in November, and it did not stop until the end of June. And in the winter, when it was really cold, the rain was snow, and we got a really big snowstorm that year. It was huge. Huge amount of rain, pouring. It was crazy rain. We all got dressed up anyway. Our suits and dresses, the girls were dressed up. And then we all donned our galoshes and our duck boots and our muck boots with our fancy clothes. And Doug had bought umbrellas, and we walked people down to the riverfront, and some of the older folks, we drove them down to the riverfront, and it was raining so hard that there was a stream running through the middle of the tent. But nobody cared. We were muddy and damp. We ate great food. We danced. We celebrated. It was great fun. And later in the day, it did clear up. The rain stopped, and we came out from under the tent to look out over the water, because Reed's Creek runs right by the farm. And don't you know, the cow-nose rays, and I'm sure many of you have seen this, came up the river in that moment. There were like 10 or 20 of them, and their little fins are breaking the surface and swimming back and forth like they were saying, "Congratulations!" It was awesome. Now, some of you may not care for possums. Is that true? I love possums. They have somewhat of an undeserved bad reputation. I think it might be because they're kind of ugly. But you could think of them as so ugly that they're cute. They eat ticks. Possums eat ticks, just so you know. And they are not really susceptible to rabies, which is a great thing. So they're actually pretty cool creatures. I particularly like them. So for about the last 5 years, we've had a possum sharing our yard. We call her Hester. And she is often seen eating the cat food on our front porch. She hangs out there. The cats sort of let her have some. She takes eggs from my hen house sometimes. And once my dogs chased her from the hen house, and she literally played dead until they went away. They were shocked. She's running. She falls over. They're like, "What's going on?" They sniffed her, and then they're like, "Well, okay, see ya." And she ran up a tree. And Annie actually even petted her one time, and that's a story in itself. But last summer, I was taking the garbage out, and I happened to look in this extra can we had sitting there, and it didn't have a lid on it. And there she was, curled up in the bottom of the trash can, and I thought she was dead. But as I looked closer, I saw that she was actually breathing. And so what had happened, she had climbed into the trash can thinking there was food in there, and she got stuck. She couldn't get back out, so she just went to sleep. It was in the middle of the day, so it was time for her to sleep. So she just went to sleep. So I laid the can over on its side so she could get out, and she did wake up when I did that for a minute. She just like gave me this look like, "Hey, sleeping here?" And went back to sleep. And she did leave later in the evening, but she stayed there all day sleeping in that can. So she was done, and then she got up and went and ate some cat food and went about her way. I love her. When I turned 40, my friend gave me several trees for my birthday, and some of them were really big. He gave me a magnolia and a river birch that were quite large, actually. But in the 10 years that they've been growing there, they have gotten huge and really influenced our yard. We have a deck that's on the north side of our house, which in the summer used to get so hot you couldn't stand out there with your bare feet. So hot. We planted the river birch next to that deck, and now the deck is shaded in the summer, and it's fabulous to sit out there. It's beautiful. I want to hug that tree every time I walk past it. It's like it envelopes us with its care. And the magnolia we put in the front yard, and right about now it's getting ready to bloom and grace us with the most magnificent fragrance. So I have one last story. This one might choke me up too, we'll see. A few years back, Willie got a job offer from an environmental organization in New Hampshire. Here was our chance to finally move north. So excited. The day they offered Willie the job, I was shocked. Not that he was offered the job, but that my heart was breaking. I had to go, okay, I'll tell you. Take a deep breath. I had to go to work that morning and take care of my kids and be together. But I know you could see the pain on my skin or feel it or something. After the morning was over, my boss, she took me aside. She's like, "Are you all right?" And I just fell apart. I was not just infatuated with here anymore. I was in love with this place that I call home. And she couldn't help but laugh at me a little bit because I was crying about leaving, and I was saying, "How am I going to leave the Eagles on the neck? I will miss them so much." But obviously, I'm still here. One of the kindest, most generous things that Willie has ever done for me is say no to that job. He really wanted the job. It was a good job, but he did not want to break my heart. And I think his heart might have broken some too. When I pass on, I am pretty sure my soul will remain here. And it will be either on the river or in the marsh, mucking about, or sitting in one of the trees in my yard. So, to my point, my ultimate point, after many stories. Wendell Berry again. Here are his words, not paraphrased this time. "The important thing," he says, "is to learn everything you can about a place and then make common cause with that place and set a good example." The Chesapeake Bay Foundation, where Willie does work, has a motto and a mission that goes something like this. "In order to protect something, you must love it. In order to love something, you must care about it. And in order to care about something, you must know it." I have been so lucky to know this place. Each of us, I'm sure, have stories of making common cause with a place. And if you don't, there is still time. We must protect this place we call home, this earth. We must love it, care for it, and know it. So, I invite you to think about your own stories. And if you don't have them, get them, or get some. Just like we would encourage each other to reach out to our community of people, we must also reach out to our community of earth and love it, as we here stand on the side of love. Amen.